Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And in the studio, we have Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Mike.
And on the phone, we have two people on two different phones. John Arano, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yes, John. And, of course, Zaz Hollander on the other phone. Welcome, Zaz.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
Just before we started, I was talking a little bit about an event that happened back on Saturday, and I know that Mark and I were there, and Zaz and John, you were not there, although you may have heard some things about it. And what I'm referring to is our annual Radio Free Palmer meeting. And the reason why I bring it up is because the speaker, keynote speaker, was Lori Townsend. And I thought she did a wonderful job of speaking from her long experience and present confrontation of a question that we deal with even today as we look at what we're going to talk about. How do you do two things? One, with all of the different information that pours into us, because we're talking to people, we're observing things, we're reading Facebook, we're doing whatever else we do for sourcing. How do we pick the topics that are going to get our attention? And then secondly, there's a second level, which is how do you separate, if you will, the chaff from real news? So I'd like to start with that in kind of a general way and say, John, you're in a place where you see a lot of stuff. How do you make decisions that focus you so that you'll be able to speak reasonably or write reasonably about a topic?
Oh, man.
Just a simple question to start off, yeah. And then we'll get to the harder ones.
A great question. It's a profound question. So our basic premise for any story that we approach is, you know, we're a small indie news outlet. We know that we can't have someone covering every traffic accident or every fire or every press conference. So the way that we try to approach stories is, is this something we can actually add something to the table? Can we expound on this? Can we actually make a point that hasn't been made yet? Or are we just regurgitating what's already been put up there? So that's kind of the first step. In terms of like all the information coming in, it's been really weird over the last couple of years because we've only been doing this for just 4 years now, a week ago.
Hey, John, a quick sidebar here. Sorry for the interruption.
No problem.
For folks who may not know, that operation is Alaska Commons. There's some excellent journalism going on there. If folks are not familiar with it, I would definitely encourage them to check out alaskacommons.com.
Sure.
I appreciate the plug and also picking up where I should have put that in myself.
Okay.
But, there is a problem in terms of, like, because we have a growing audience, we aren't where we were a couple years ago. A couple years ago, there'd be, 10 or 12 likes on a post and maybe a comment or two. Now we've shifted into the position where there are 40, 50 comments on every post. Just 2 days ago, I was arguing with somebody because I'm that idiot who actually engages with everybody in the comment section. we get things, where people are saying, the state legislature hasn't cut a single thing. I was arguing with somebody who was saying that we need to be more economically conservative, like Norway, and not as socialist as we are, which broke my head. It's really difficult to both engage and dissect different arguments coming in and figure out, I use the comment section really to try to figure out where people are coming from, and I use it as a way to ask questions to try to figure out where, how the dialogue is created, how opinions are formulated, and I go from there.
Okay.
And how have you handled a commenter who you know, may not be willing to accept the truth as objective?
Well, this is where I'm particularly stupid. I keep going. You know, just last night, talking to somebody online who is complaining that, you know, we've never cut a thing, and he was arguing that he was actually making the case that public sector workers don't pay taxes at all. And so I took it as an opportunity to you know, link Anchorage's municipal exemptions, you know, where if you're a military veteran who serves in a combat zone, that's dealt with in terms of property taxes on a per month basis, or you get certain exemptions if you're a widow or widower of a veteran. You know, I just keep linking things, and I just keep trying to connect and trying to figure out what the root of their disinformation is, and just keep trying to prod a little bit to get the truth of the thing.
Okay, well, that's a good good follow-up question, Mark. Let's turn to Zaz. You're in a different circumstance. We've identified John as having a internet-based activity and a lot of commentary follow-up. You, Zaz, are more in what, if I can categorize you, the form of a traditional newspaper reporter, print journalism, and yet the same question applies. Go
for it. I think that the phrase, Mike, is evolving dinosaur.
Well, then you're going to be around for a while, because it took a while for those dinosaurs to go. Okay, go for it.
But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the same standards that John, and John hit on, you know, most of the high points, I think. I think news is news, and a lot of the same standards apply. You know, in my business, you know, we used to say at least that, you know, we are the paper of record. And I think there are still and always will be certain historic events, you know, even those that are expected, you know, let's say the Supreme Court nomination that went through today. There are certain things that happen that we all have to cover, and we all cover it. And hopefully there are, you know, some shades of difference, but there's certain stories you just do. But then fairly quickly, I think there are maybe two other layers. They're the holy crap stories that you just say, you know, a story idea comes up and you know it's a story. You know people will talk about it. It will engage readers. Readers may not like it, which I think often is a good thing because it gets people talking. But I mean, there are certain stories that are kind of irresistible. And then there's maybe a closely related third, which would be, you know, for my publication, for Alaska Dispatch News, or for any other publication. And I also was a freelancer for a little while. So, you know, whatever your brand is, there are the stories that you know or hope you do better than your competition, that just for whatever reason, your experience with an issue, your sourcing, the medium you're in, I mean, one of the stories I've been working on, I'm not saying I do it better than others. I think I'm the only one doing it. the only reason it might be better is Matanuska Glacier and access to that glacier. And there's probably another story coming out on that one. There's been a civil lawsuit filed by the people who operate the tour company that basically has, I guess for lack of a better way to say it right now, has the glacier hostage. You know, they own the private access road in. You know, there are certain stories, and I think, you know, all of us, I know John does, have certain markets or certain stories that we've dug into, we know a lot about, and we try to own them. But I think that these days, as competitive as our markets are, and as difficult as our economic share is, and our, you know, somewhat questionable future, I suppose, in our business, we need to be doing the stories that matter to people. Sometimes I know in the past it was easy to get into our little fishbowl of what journalists think is important. And I know the public knows that journalism is important, but I think sometimes we lose touch of what's important to people when we get inside that fishbowl.
Okay, good point. And Mark Kelsey, long history and a variety of different levels of all of this. What's your sense of it?
That's a great point that Zaz made there at the end about you know, giving people what they want and balancing that with, you know, giving them essentially information that they need. What happened at the city council meeting? What's going on in Juneau? These kinds of stories, you know, government stories in general, don't tend to poll high on lists of what readers turn to. But I think most newsrooms would argue that it's still essential information. So finding that balance is definitely part of the challenge going forward.
Well, thank you all for providing a response to that convoluted question. I have a kind of an interesting follow-up to it, and that is to set the scene by saying many listeners, and we all are, have been following the budget deliberations that have been ongoing in Juneau, and it's very significant decisions going to make that will affect many, many people in Alaska. And yet there was recently a arguably smaller story that dealt with a decision where a vote in the legislature occurred, and it was 59-1. It was 59-1. And what was interesting about it is my first attention to that vote was actually from a national site, the Huffington Post, which quoted our own representative from Palmer, Delaina Johnson, who made a comment in response to the individual, the single House member in the state, who voted no to that particular bill. And what I'm referring to was a bill that essentially recognized the thousands of soldiers of color that worked on the highway here to Alaska in extreme conditions and had not been recognized. Are you familiar with that story, John?
Yeah, we broke it.
Okay. So, you chose to do that, even given all of the different things that were being done and said and happening in Juneau. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of amazing. One of the things I really pride our organization with is the fact that, you know, we only have two full-time reporters, but Craig and I are watching the legislature all day, every day. And sometimes things that are just completely unplanned will pop up, you know, like David Eastman basically saying, using that resolution to honor the 4,000 Black Army Corps of Engineers that constructed the Alcan, to say all lives matter. And, you know, it's happened at least once a year, every year, where, you know, either I'll call him or he'll call me and be like, did you just see that? Because I think there was a thing there. So, yeah, David Eastman basically took this resolution carried by David Wilson and carried by Tammy Wilson in the House that would honor the 4,000 Black Army Engineer Corps segregated regiments, it should be pointed out, which is a big part of the story. These are folks from the 388th Engineer Battalion and the 93rd, 95th, and 97th Engineer General Service Regiments. They were kept out of cities. There's a story about how when they went into Valdez, the white and you know, the white engineers got to stay in the city. The Black regiments were forced to stay in tents outside of the city in sub-zero temperatures. And Eastman weirdly chose this opportunity to say that, you know, we shouldn't really target specific groups to celebrate. And he completely forgot about the fact that he's actually sponsored and co-sponsored different resolutions to honor other specific groups, you know, African American History Month, Filipino American History Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, Days of Remembrance to honor Holocaust victims. So it was a really bizarre spectacle. that I really don't think anybody saw coming.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know that it was covered in the Alaska Dispatch News. You did not write that article, I don't believe, Saz.
No, I think that was Matt Hurst.
Right.
Yeah, it was Matt.
Right. Any comment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is the case, but certainly, and John and Mark can provide specific examples. None are coming to mind for me right now, but Wes Keller certainly wasn't immune from these kind of one man taking on the legislature with sort of seemingly random legislation, you know, stuff that got him a lot of attention. But
and Vic Corn really before him in that district.
True.
Right.
But so this is also interesting in that, you know, he was going, quote unquote, up against another MATSU legislator, David Wilson, who is no relation to Tammy Wilson, by the way. And that, so the MATSU caucus was kind of split on this one.
Right.
Well, Eastman was split with everybody on this one. So.
Sure. So
the Valley's had a rough week.
Yeah. So okay. So I think the general sense, certainly by the commentary that I saw, including coming from other legislators, was this was somewhat unexpected. Certainly, David Eastman ran through his justification. You covered the story in much more depth than I have read about, John. But I guess, is this this to be taken as and you've already sort of answered it by saying this is not a principle which was that he's been standing on throughout his time. So what if writing about this provides some news, is there what do we take away from the story?
Well, above the fact that, I guess I'll reiterate that the Valley's had a bad week. So Craig was the one that actually caught this story and wrote about it, and I'm just kind of echoing his sentiment. But, you know, it was a really, you know, it is kind of a fun moment, and Zaz kind of pointed to this earlier when talking about those oh wow stories that you don't plan, you just realize they just happened and you write accordingly. And I think this was kind of a wake up call to folks where he really went out of his way to defend this kind of indefensible position. And that's something that people should take note about. You know, if you even look at the House minority, you know, everybody was playing keep away with his comments. You know, nobody wanted to associate. It was just keep your comments away from me. That's not how I feel.
Okay. Sure.
Was that spoken by anyone?
Delana Sullivan Leonard, in response to Eastman's comments in that committee meeting, said that, you know, we absolutely need to recognize this group of people and honor them for the distinction they deserve. You know, I know it's on the other side, but Chris Tuck, majority leader with the majority coalition, I think he honestly was more eloquent than I think I've ever seen him in stating that, you know, they deserve distinction. You know, we're not singling them out. They were singled out because they were black. And that's why this is important. So it's tough when you're in a caucus, especially the way that caucuses go right now, where you saw Dunleavy leave a caucus because he didn't feel he could go by the binding rules of the caucus. It's tough to speak independently. But I would note that I haven't seen anybody come out in defense of Eastman's comments.
Do you know if anyone took him aside afterward?
Oh, I would love to be a fly on that wall, but no, I don't.
Okay. Well, I think I wanted to bring that up because it was an interesting example of, as you're describing it, John, something that popped up and possibly deserves more commentary at another time. We only have a few more minutes left, surprisingly, and there are a couple of other topics that have occurred here in the Valley. recently that have been covered, and they involve a couple of actions. The Matsuburo School Board, in particular, is looking at ways to respond to what they see as a definitely anxiety-producing set of potential cuts coming their way, and one of the options that they have begun talking about at great length and with intensity is the outsourcing of a component of their staff, custodians in this case. And I listened to a good portion of the meeting on Wednesday, and this looks to be one a topic that still is going to require them to talk and get more information about. Zaz, any sense of that?
Yeah, I've been busy with other stuff this week and sort of tracked this remotely. I didn't cover the school board meeting. As I understand it, the staff has recommended in favor of this privatization and in favor of NANA, one of three bidders. And that's a little bit fraught for a number of people in the union who represent these. It's both custodial and nutrition services. Because apparently NANA submitted some late paperwork as part of their sealed bid. The other two bidders had a complete packet. NANA did not. I've heard it was the cost estimate, which would seem like an important piece of a bid that was not included in their packet. I haven't reported this directly, so I don't know what the circumstances are. But despite that, apparently district staff is recommending that NANA get this contract. The school board has yet to vote on that. They'll do that at their next meeting.
Right. That'll be in 2 weeks. And they have, I think, there was an attempt to separate out the two issues, the first issue being whether this was a responsive bid. If it were determined not to be a responsive bid, then the discussion was moot. But if you were going to accept it, and essentially the administration was recommending that it would be accepted, then you moved on to the further discussion of what has changed since that time 6 years ago when NANA had received the contract, and then the district pulled it back, and there was some considerable concern that the company had to demonstrate some change since that time, or you're going to be looking at a replay of something that was a bump in the road in the past.
So, well, and I think there's also a kind of a cost balance in the bigger picture that I'm sure will be, well, I would hope would be part of the school board discussion, and that is, you know, 6 years ago, the complaints were, for whatever reason, that the jobs that had been done before weren't being done as well under a private contract, and so other staffers were having to clean up. That there were, you know, custodians. I think anybody with kids, especially in the lower levels, you know, I have kids in elementary school. Full disclosure, in Mattoo District, and I love our custodian. He knows, you know, my kid by name, and his name is Mr. Russell, and the principal's name is Mr. Russell, and so the custodian is Mr. Russell 1, and the principal is Mr. Russell 2, and there is a certain, maybe harder to quantify, role that these custodians are playing. You know, maybe Mr. Russell 1 would get his job back. Maybe he would be rehired by NANA or whoever gets this bid if they privatize. But there are certain kind of cost of life equations that people are starting to raise. I think this privatization contract would save, what, over $1 million against an $11 million deficit right now.
Right.
You know, the talk is otherwise we're going to have to go to larger class sizes. Other things will have to get cut. And so, you know, obviously these are very difficult times, but I think there are some legitimate questions as to whether this is the best way to save money and whether other savings in terms of time by staff and student quality might be lost.
But do you think that there will be a court challenge, you know, to the bid?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question, Mark.
And I don't have an answer to that as well, John. From your perch, have you heard anything about these activities in the Valley related to the school board?
I haven't specific to the Valley, but I think this is the tip of the iceberg of issues that I think that we're going to see crop up. Numerous court challenges, numerous. You know, I mean, there are certain quantifiable things we understand about education, right? Like, we need to reduce class sizes. We need to have more teacher and student time. We need less dependency on, you know, teaching to the test. And where you look at the state budget, you know, there's a $20 million cut to education. In Anchorage, that's, we're looking at between 250 and 300 positions lost, which is teachers and custodians alike. You know, we have questions about the Alaska Performance Scholarships, $2.8 million cut to pre-K grants and programs, $22 million cut to the University of Alaska. You know, that is not going to help class size. That's not going to facilitate more teacher-to-student time. So I think what you're seeing in the Valley is a precursor to something that, under the existing conditions, we're going to be seeing a lot more of, and it's going to get a lot worse.
Okay. Well, we'd like to talk. This is the on-ramp to a much longer discussion, and perhaps we can continue it in a further edition of Valley Edition. But right now, I'm going to say thank you to John Arano for calling in. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And thank you for Zaz Hollander for also calling in. Thank you, Zaz.
Oh, sure thing, Mike. Thank you.
And thank you for Mark Kelsey for traveling all the way to the studio. Thank you, Mark.
Have a great week, everyone.
All right. We'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.